When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Addiction, prevention, recovery.
Welcome to the Recovery Rebirth Podcast.
Welcome to the Recovery Rebirth Podcast. I'm Dominic.
And I'm Jillian.
Welcome, audience. We're connecting with another episode. Today is all about catastrophizing.
I was afraid this would happen.
Exactly. I don't know what it is about human nature, Jillian, but why do we think negativity all the time? I mean, we think the worst about every. It seems to be human nature. People don't automatically think positive thoughts. If something's happening, even in a business meeting, you always hear people saying, well, what's the worst case scenario? You know, let's hear the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
But catastrophizing is a real thing, isn't it?
It is. And I think especially for people in recovery, like I don't really know what it's like for normies, but yeah, it seems to be a common theme. And at least, you know, for me personally, it's been there for most of my life.
Yeah. I had to look up the definition because I wanted to explore the topic more deeply.
You're a word nerd like me.
Yeah. Word nerd. Had to look it up. And it is basically when someone assumes the worst will actually happen.
Yeah.
And often involves being in a worse situation than you're actually facing.
Yeah.
And for some reason, like I said, human nature tends to have us thinking negative thoughts quite often. People in general, especially in the stressed out world that we live in today, people aren't thinking this is going to turn out great. It's like, what could happen? What could fail? But when we catastrophize, we're over-exaggerating. For instance, I'll give a quick example, and then I know you have a solid one to talk about today, but based on a previous episode as well, so we'll reference that in a second. But Google is the most popular search engine out there, and the minute I have an ache or a pain or any type of what would be called a symptom, I'm Googling it, and it seems like catastrophization happens immediately because everything could either be like cancer or death. Of course, there's... a pain could be cancer, but it also just might be you pulled a muscle or twisted the wrong way. You know, we're not getting any younger. Yeah. So, that's my thing. And PTSD actually ties into it. Giving a serious example. When I was younger and throughout quite a bit of my life, we were talking pre-podcast about pushing buttons and what are your buttons kind of thing. And one of my buttons is financial problems. So, but when I was growing up as a young child, my father was a workaholic.
Yeah.
He gave himself a heart condition, with his stress he put on himself to make a living. And, my mother was a severely depressed woman who turned into a full-blown alcoholic and was worried about money a lot. My father was worried about money. So it transferred to me as a young child, and part of my childhood trauma is dealing with money problems. So why wouldn't that be one of my buttons that sets me off? Like if I don't get a particular project at work or something happens where money's involved, I catastrophize. I'm thinking, this is it. I'm going to be homeless. I'm going to be broke.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, yeah.
You know, it just, it exacerbates itself in so many different ways. And then you end up getting into crippling fear, like at least I do. I'm in fear mode, you know, and then you turn into fight or flight mode, and you're, you know, adrenaline's pumping, and it doesn't do any good for anybody, and it doesn't make for a happy life or
right.
or fixing the actual problem itself or the challenge that's before me. So
right.
that's my little story, this PTSD from childhood that kicks in and causes me to catastrophize about financial issues.
Right.
Now, I know, Jillian, you've been through or going through still a bit of a health crisis.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's – I mean, it has felt like a crisis sometimes. Currently it's not, but I am having surgery and just under a week, and it's my first time having a major surgery. So I have, and we talked about that, you know, this is, right off our podcast that we recorded about, health concerns in recovery. And I do have to say, I mean, like you and like so many other people, like I've consulted Dr. Google too many times, and I joked about this last time. I'm like, it could be a hangnail, and if you go far enough down the rabbit hole, like death, it's always like,
right.
that is the ultimate out, like that's going to be the outcome. If you dig far enough, you know, you're going to find that. And you know, for your, I have to say for your PTSD around finances, like that was an inherited trauma in a way, because you observed, you witnessed your parents do it, and you ended up modeling that yourself. And it's interesting when I think about my catastrophizing, I think a lot of it is also kind of rooted in my childhood fear of abandonment, I'm finding. So with me and what I'm currently going through, I also recognize that a lot of it is connected to the loss of my brother. So when my brother died at the end of June of 2021, and it was somewhat expected, like he had a bevy of health issues related to his, he was beyond morbidly obese. He was like the next level up. So he was probably 530-ish pounds and like only 5'6". So yeah, very, very obese, had, diabetes, congestive heart failure, high blood pressure. And his doctor told him probably maybe midway through his 40s, you know, if nothing changes, you won't live to be 50. And he was 49 when he died. So after that, I found myself, and I think this is common, like we're faced with our mortality, right? When someone close to us dies, but especially with it being like your sibling, we were 11 months and 3 weeks apart, Irish twins. And, but the other thing that came up for me is like, oh my gosh, what if my dad loses his only other child? Like it's not, I mean, do I have a bit of a fear of death? I think most people do. Like there's some, that's a common, all of us are going to die. I mean, that's just something we have.
Nobody's getting out of this alive, like is the old
saying.
Jim
Morrison said, yeah. So I don't know that, the death part's not a problem. It's the getting there. It's the dying part. Like, how's it going to happen? Like, am I going to die in my sleep, or is it going to be a horrific car accident? Or, I mean, none of us knows, and we all have to wrestle with that. But I think for me, it was actually more a fear of, I'm very protective of my dad. I'm very protective of my dad. And I just don't want my dad to experience any more trauma or grief. Like, he's been through enough. And so that was triggering. And then when I had, through this series of tests and stuff, I discovered, like, I had this presumably non-cancerous tumor that women my age can develop called a fibroid. And that's what the catalyst for my hysterectomy that I'm getting, which is a very routine procedure, right? And I have an amazing doctor, and she's doing an advanced like procedure. It's not an open abdominal. I'm really in great hands, but my brain, you know, my catastrophizing brain goes to, well, what if I'm the 1% who dies in surgery? Like early on, that's where I was. Or like, what if I get a blood clot? What if I walk out of here and get hit by a car? I mean, the odds of me getting into a car accident and dying are greater than me dying in surgery, but we don't feel in control. I think that's the other thing is, you know, if I'm driving a car, I feel like I'm in control. But if I'm under general anesthesia, I'm at the mercy of, even though she's a phenomenal doctor, like I'm not in control of any of that. Let's just say
when you're in a car today, you're actually living in faith, because people
yes,
are driving
yes,
all
are.
Crazy out there. I have faith that you're not going to jump the yellow line and kill me.
Yes, yes. But it's just, yeah, it's interesting how our brains are like on a, like, flying on a plane, which I've not done a lot, but again, it's like my hands aren't on the wheel. Like I'm at the mercy of this pilot, and I hope he's in a good place today.
I've taken a couple of flights recently, and I've thought, you know, they just want to get home. They want to get home today. You know, it's like you picture yourself driving home during rush hour traffic at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and you just kind of want to get there.
Yep.
You know, and you know, that's that pilot goes through the same thing. You know, but yes, we're not in control. Do you have anxiety? I think we've talked about this before, but I'll ask for the benefit of the listeners. Do you have anxiety issues?
So I didn't think I did. Generally speaking, I don't think so. But, you know, sometimes we're good at lying to ourselves. But I had acute anxiety when I was going through this health stuff at the end of December when I got an MRI result that had the word sarcoma in it. And I had to go back and reread the whole thing because it said features concerning for hyperplasia, which is like just an overgrowth of cells, / carcinoma. And that's what got me referred to an oncologist to do my surgery. But it was when I went into our local cancer center for that appointment, my blood pressure was 161 over like almost 90. And I'm typically hypotensive. So I was incredibly anxious. And I think most people walking into a cancer center are. But my best friend went with me. God bless her. She was my emotional support person because I needed somebody who wasn't going to be acutely anxious to be an extra set of ears. And, you know, the doctor came in and she's like, there's a 1 in 2,000 chance that this is cancerous. So I think that's like less than 1%. It's like 0.005 or something. I'm not great with numbers, but I'm like, oh, that doesn't sound too scary. And she's like, explain the procedure and it's going to be outpatient, which is better than the surgery I was going to get. And then she's like, yeah, and your lymph nodes look fine. So afterwards, my best friend had to remind me. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, what if she missed something? She's like, Jill, I was there. That doctor, that specialist, the expert in her field, because she's the chair of her department, she didn't seem concerned. But my brain, you know, I was super catastrophizing during that time and feeling so anxious and had some very sleepless nights. And I finally, like I shared in the last podcast, like I finally found a way to connect with a version of a higher power that's not usually my higher power, but it gave me peace and just like talking out loud to God. But I was incredibly anxious at that time, just like a bundle of nerves. And but doing that allowed me to sleep peacefully. And so, yeah, right now I don't feel very anxious about my surgery because I know logically I'm in good hands, but I'm going to have a conversation with her about the general anesthetic makes me a little nervous. I've only had it once. That was like 30 years ago. Medicine's better now, but I have definitely gotten anxious around that. And again, I think it's related to that fear. My catastrophizing, I think, definitely comes from fear. And there is a saying I've heard in recovery, let your faith be stronger than your fear.
Oh, definitely. Looking up the information on catastrophizing is all about fear.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's not living in any kind of faith in anything. You're assuming the worst, and that is living in fear.
Yeah.
You know, taking risks versus the reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any surgery is a risk. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could go to the skin doctor to get a biopsy done, which is nothing really. They scrape a little bit of the surface off your skin.
Yeah.
But people can catastrophize about that now. I've got skin cancer, or or what if the scalpel's dirty and I get a germ and I get an infection and I'm going to lose my arm.
You
know, or whatever, you know. I personally have anxiety. I know I have anxiety, generalized anxiety disorder.
Gotcha.
And a lot of that has to do with childhood trauma.
Yep.
You know, when you go through what I went through as a child, it makes perfect sense to me that mm-hmm. I would have a general anxiety issue.
Yeah.
Because nothing was normal in my childhood. You know, I really didn't have any normal childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And even going into high school and early college was not. Nothing was normal. My beginning of my work life was not normal, you know, just everything. So, yeah, I have an anxiety issue. And to describe it for people who don't have anxiety, it's just like it's like if somebody has an electrical cord plugged in near some audio equipment, you hear that what they call 60 cycle hum kind of thing. It just, you know, you hear that humming sound, and it's just having this constant anxiety undertone to everything. It's like a constant electrical charge going through you. And it happens at the weirdest times. Like, things could be going great.
Yes.
Could be having a phenomenal day, yep. Kick up my feet on the desk for a minute at the end of the day, and all of a sudden a thought comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it sends a shockwave of fear through your system for absolutely zero reason.
Mm-hmm.
No validity at all.
Yeah. I have a friend that goes through that. So, and so regarding anxiety, at my stage as somebody with the uterus and with the female hormones, it's a time of high anxiety for many women my age, for many, you know, yeah, like one of my good friends has developed some pretty acute health anxiety during this phase. And I don't know if she has generalized so much. I think it's mostly focused on that. But she has told me, like, that's sometimes when it'll creep in, like when everything's calm and peaceful, and then her brain's like, hey. And I've even noticed that, like, let's catastrophize. Let's manufacture some anxiety. And I think that some people, like, I don't know, I used to be addicted to busyness. That's one way, I think, to avoid anxiety sometimes, is we keep ourselves so busy we don't have time to sit with it. It's when it's calm and peaceful that our brain can start to go, like...
Yeah, good point.
I mean, it's just something
when
I've observed.
When that weird thought comes in, it's when you're sitting still.
Exactly. Yep, yeah. Exactly. So there's some other things. I mean, health concerns for sure, but I have written down, like, some just examples throughout my life of things that I can catastrophize about. So maybe we can just kind of share stories real quick. There are examples.
Sure.
So some of the things I catastrophize about. When I was young, I worried a lot about my dad dying. And I guarantee, again, that was rooted in, connected to my fear of abandonment, because one parent was very absent in my life, my mom. So I was so focused on my dad. And he had a pretty dangerous job for a while as a tree trimmer, and, like, had a couple close encounters with a chainsaw, and one time almost cut off his leg.
Ooh.
So, like, any time he would be running late, I'm like, oh my gosh, my dad died in an accident. Also, like, later in life, even into, like, you know, present day, a handful of years ago, before I sold my house, my dad and my son, I think it was my dad and my son, or maybe my daughter, anyhow, my dad and one of my children had gone somewhere, and they were supposed to be home back to my house at a certain time. Well, unlike his daughter, who's fashionably late, I'm like, good gracious, yeah. I'm not known to be timely in my family. My dad is. They were probably 10 minutes late. I'm not even kidding. And my brain in that time, I'm like, they died in a car accident, because I think my dad wasn't answering his phone, which is not uncommon for him.
Well, does that tie back to the trauma response that we were talking about?
Yes.
And your feelings of abandonment?
Yes. Yeah, I guarantee it does. And literally, like, they pull in the driveway and I am already in tears. Like, I'm already, like, planning the eulogy at their funeral.
Oh, my God.
It was, yeah, so catastrophizing.
So it sounds like you have a little bit of history of catastrophizing. Just, a little bit.
Just a little bit. Been doing it for decades. other ways it shows up is, like, during my annual reviews at work, I'll assume that I'm going to have a horrible review. But then consistently, like, I hear, like, I get good reviews. And then, of course, my other character defects or shortcomings, I have all kinds of a bevy of just, like, quirks. I'm just like, well, if they knew how I was really doing, they wouldn't give me a good review. I'm like, oh, my gosh. So I think part of this, like, accepting good things, I struggle to accept and believe that good things can happen because of my childhood, because I was always waiting for the other shoe to drop, because I was always used to chaos and drama, that it's been difficult for me to adjust to, like, accepting good things. It's messed up. I mean, it's a maladaptive coping mechanism. And I know to people outside of recovery, they might think that's the most bizarre thing I've ever heard, but I know that about me. So yeah, even with job interviews, I'm expecting to hear the worst, and then I'll get, like, a great review, and then I'm like,
Well, I'm always amazed because I'm my own worst critic. I'm always amazed when somebody tells me I did a good job on something.
Yeah.
I'm always like, really? Thank you.
Right.
You know, like, because I'm beating myself up with, you know,
yes,
PTSD from everything turning to crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I assume that, you know, I'm doing my best, but it's not good enough or whatever. And it has been shown in studies that, you know, the catastrophizing thing comes from a post-traumatic stress. It's a trauma response.
Yeah, trauma response. Yeah, it makes total sense to me.
It's a trauma response. So
like so many other things.
Like so many other things. But wow. You know what the cool part is? This whole podcast is based on recovery topics.
Yes.
Aside from the separation of drugs and alcohol and those types, or people, because there's plenty of good programs out there for people to get separated from the initial thing, whether it be alcohol, whether it be drugs, whether it be people, whatever. But we try to address the issues around all of that.
Yes.
The nucleus is, you know, we have a maladaptive coping mechanism.
Yep.
Using drugs, using alcohol, using people, using whatever it is, gambling addiction,
shopping,
it could be anything,
yep.
Shopping addiction,
food,
all of it. But then you go to the next, like, you know, circle out, and there's all these other issues.
Yeah.
And the beauty of it is if we can get to the root, which I say more than once in this, if we can get
Absolutely.
To the root, we can help try to fix this.
Yes.
I can share with you real quick one tool that I use when
Please.
I get myself, because I do have anxiety and I do catastrophize like, you know, we were describing in today's program. So I'll use the good old fashioned serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change.
Yep.
The courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And in that moment, when I'm having anxiety and start catastrophizing, I say to myself, is this something I can change? Is this something I should be doing something about this immediately? And or is it something I cannot change? Do I need to relax about this because it's out of my control, like sitting in the airplane and the pilot's flying and relying on somebody else? Or and the wisdom to know the difference between the two, because we can easily think that something is within our control when in fact it is not.
Yep.
And the older I get, the more I realize everything, almost everything, 90% of life is out of our control. I can't control how you think or feel. I got enough trouble controlling how I think or feel. But at least if I can get to the root of this and realize that maybe I'm having a false response to something that is based on my past, I can at least relax for the moment and say, listen, everything's going to be fine. And and that's what I use. What tools did you use to get through some of your catastrophizing? Because you just described some great scenarios.
I was actually using the Serenity Prayer a lot when I was in that acute phase of before I went to see the oncology doctor. Like, I was using the Serenity Prayer a lot. And something else that I think I was telling you about is to focus on the outcome I want, not what I fear. So that's something else. Like with this upcoming surgery, I have other fears, like, you know, because there could be a change in my hormones depending on the kind of surgery, if I have to have ovaries removed, because my fear is, oh my gosh, my hormones are going to shift wildly. I'm going to have a psychotic break. I'm going to end up like my mom. I'm going to push my kids away, and I'm going to wind up alone. It's kind of that abandonment thing in a way, right? Like, everybody's going to leave me.
Right.
So, and I'm like, okay, pause. Let's pump the brakes here. But like focusing on the outcome I want, not catastrophizing about the things that could go wrong. Focusing on what I want is another thing that I use along with the Serenity Prayer, because like worry in general, catastrophizing causes us to potentially suffer twice. Like a lot of times what we catastrophize about, it thankfully never comes to pass. But if it does, then we've spent all that time being robbed of our serenity leading up to the event, and then we have to suffer again. So those are two of my go-tos lately.
So I got a reference for you, and hopefully this will show up in the show notes. The law of attraction.
Yes, and. Yep. So, yes.
The law of attraction, you get what you think about. Whether you like it or not, that's what happens. If you focus all your attention on being broke, you'll probably end up broke. If you focus all your attention on being sick, you're probably going to get sicker. If you focus on getting well, you're going to get weller. Is that a word?
Not technically, but it would be a pass.
But, you know, if I focus on, like, financial matters is one of my hot buttons. So if I focus on what can I do to make more money or, mm-hmm. you know, pay this bill off faster or whatever I need to do to relieve my stress. If I focus on that, then new doors tend to open up.
Yeah.
The law of attraction does work. If we think about the worst, we're going to attract the worst.
I agree with it to a degree. And here's my little pushback, because I was talking to, in that acute phase, I thankfully had a therapy session scheduled the day I got the call from my doctor saying, I'm referring you to this oncologist. So I was, oh my gosh, like just downward spiral anxiety. And so I was talking to my therapist about the concept of the law of attraction, because I started to watch his documentary that I'd watched before about like the power of the mind to heal our body. And she was telling me how she takes issue with the law of attraction because it can kind of fall into victim blaming. Like, Jillian, you didn't cause cancer in yourself if you worry that whatever. So, I mean, I believe it to a degree. And that's why I'd say like the whole, and it kind of goes along with the focus on the outcome I want. So I think it's a yes and for me with the law of attraction, because I do try to focus on what I want, because I'm familiar with it. And like, you know, what you, because there's this book called The Secret and there's a movie and it's all about the law of attraction. But I definitely do believe that focusing on what we want, not what we fear, will support our mental health and help stop us from catastrophizing as much and worrying about things outside our control. So I definitely agree with that, is like focusing on what you want.
I hear you when you say, you know, that you didn't cause cancer in your body, so it's not like you attracted this thing.
Yes.
Or whatever. I get and I understand what your therapist perhaps was getting at. Now,
yeah.
I obviously wasn't in the room, so I'm assuming some things. But the thing about it is you can't live in fantasy either. We've done episodes
like about this.
Yeah, we just talked about fantasy addiction. So you can't like just live as if you're a rich person when you've got, you know,
right.
10 grand coming in a year. You know, you can't just say, I'm thinking about nothing but positive thoughts, so I'm going to go buy a boat and
right.
a Mercedes. And
I'm manifesting wealth in my life.
I'm manifesting wealth in my life. No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about going off into fantasy land, but refocusing your energies. Like, if the doctors tell you you have cancer, mm-hmm. My thought is, in the law of attraction, what you want to believe is cancer can be cured.
Yes. Yep.
And when the doctor tells you, because I've known people who have cancer that they had 6 months to live and it's 15 years
uh-huh.
later.
Yep.
I also know people who went into the hospital and got diagnosed with cancer and dead in a week.
Wow.
So, I mean, it happens. But but I'm just saying, to keep yourself positive mentally.
Yes.
I mean, you said it earlier in our conversation. We don't know when we're going to die. We're going to die when our time is to die.
Yep.
There's people who smoke cigarettes and drink a bottle of scotch every day, and they're 97 years old.
Right.
Okay, so some people can do that.
Yep.
But other people, you know, they're 48 years old, they're marathon runners, and they keel over one day.
You know,
and they're in perfect physical condition. So we do not know. But wouldn't it be nice to have a positive attitude with the time we do have left?
Exactly.
And that's what I'm getting at with
Agreed.
The law of attraction
yep.
there.
Is
that if you operate in the law of attraction, you attract what you want,
uh-huh.
but you don't live in a fantasy world doing it.
Right.
You have to, part of the law of attraction that I've read about, it also puts into practicality the things you need to do to continue to attract what you want.
Right.
Whether
right.
it be a better job, an attractive spouse, friends, mm-hmm. Even if, you know, let's say a car that you want. Have you ever noticed when you're driving down the road and you're thinking about getting a Ford Explorer, and then all of a sudden you see a whole bunch of Ford Explorers on the road because you're thinking about it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the law of attraction. It just sort of, you notice things more. So I would like to notice the positive. Even if I'm going to die tomorrow, I'd like to right. do it in a positive vein.
Well, yeah, and same for me. So my goal is to have as much serenity in today. Because we can only live in the moment, right? Like Eckhart Tolle, I think I've mentioned him before, like the power of now. So really just staying focused in the moment. And what I would tell myself during that time of acute anxiety, aside from like talking to God and focusing on the outcome I want, I'm like, I don't have a diagnosis today. Today I feel great. Today life is good. I have, you know, like I would focus on what I have to be grateful for in today. And a gratitude practice really helps me as well. So just like counting my blessings every day to the best of my abilities, that helps keep me out of the catastrophizing. Can I share one before we end? Like another?
Nope. You're cut off.
Oh,
of course you could share. That's what this podcast is about.
I have one more funny story. It's funny now because it's not happening. At the time, I was catastrophizing, and it's topical. It's because so 5 years ago, yesterday, my kids and my daughter's fiance, we arrived in Italy, and it was a crap show of a start to the trip because it was March 1st when we were supposed to be flying out of Detroit, and we got a bit of snow because even though I like to think like a flip, like you flip a switch March 1st, no, we're still technically in winter. So we're sitting on the plane.
Hey, we live in Michigan. Winter could last through May.
I know. Oy. So it was March 1st, and we're sitting on the plane, and it's snowing, and so we're sitting out on the tarmac for 2 hours, and they finally take us back to our gate. And my son's like, Mom, there's other planes taking off. Why aren't we leaving? I'm like, I don't know, but I trust the pilot. You know, I trust the people who are flying the plane and the engineers and whatever, mechanics. So we go back. It ended up there was a big storm that hit like the eastern seaboard. So we were supposed to have a connection in Newark. So we get back in. And, of course, they're overwhelmed at the desk and everybody's trying to reschedule their flights. And the woman's like, well, if I were you, I wouldn't get on that plane tonight because they're gonna be stuck in Newark for a day. So then she reroutes us, so we wound up with another connection. So we got rerouted like the next morning. We flew from Detroit to Dulles to Munich to Rome, so we went extra stop. Well, our flight from Detroit was, well, it was fine, but our landing in Dulles, there was a lot of wind, and so we were a little bit delayed. We had to literally run from our gate to make that connection. We get to Munich and we've missed our connection. And at this point, because my response to stress is I don't eat and I don't sleep. I didn't sleep well. So I'm sleep deprived. I'm hungry. Hungry, angry, right. Lonely, tired, right?
Hungry, angry, and, lonely, and tired.
And I am crumbling. And now we have a language barrier. And what I intended to do, because thank you, ADHD procrastination, I meant to get a SIM card at the airport because I didn't expect Murphy's Law to kick in. So I was going to get a SIM card because I didn't get an international plan. So here we are in Munich. We're getting ready to go through security. Back in Detroit, I asked the lady when I look at our tickets. So my son and my daughter's boyfriend at the time, they both had seat assignments when we got to Munich. My daughter and I didn't. And I asked the lady, I'm like, are you sure we'll be okay? She's like, yeah. I'm like, no, but are you sure? And she was probably so overwhelmed dealing with, you know, people trying to reschedule these flights. Yeah, you're good. So we get to Munich, try to go through security, and they're like, oh, well, you don't have seat assignments. So my son and my daughter's boyfriend are on the other side. They can't come back through. I have no way to communicate with them. Like, we don't have phone service. And so I am ready to go curl up in a, like, and suck my thumb and curl up in fetal position. And literally, and my daughter, God bless her. I mean, she's an adult. So she's like working with the sweet lady at Lufthansa. If I could only ever fly that airline, they were amazing. So my daughter's, I mean, the woman obviously speaks English too. So she's negotiating all that. And here's me in my mind. I'm like, I don't have money to buy another ticket. I can't, like, I'm like, we're going to have to, like, sell ourselves on the streets to get money. It was my, well, the places my brain goes when I'm, like, super sleep deprived, hungry, and fearful, right? I was the crap I was making up in my head, the catastrophizing. That didn't happen. We didn't have to pay, like, $1,000 for a new flight. The woman ended up getting it. She's like, I can't get you, you know, near each other, but I can get you on the same flight. I'm like, perfect. Don't even care. So in the end, we all wound up on the same flight from Germany to Rome, but I was having a meltdown.
Sure, you were thinking about every movie you ever saw where somebody was stuck in a youth hostel and
yes!
dealing with,
oh
you
my
know,
gosh.
Stuck in Europe indefinitely, yeah. A stranger not speaking the language. Sure, I get it.
Anyhow, it's funny now. Like 5 years later, I can look back and laugh, but at the time, I was just a hot mess, and thank God for my daughter who was able to navigate that situation better than I was because I was... Yeah, super catastrophizing.
So I'll just share a quick one, and it also has to do with airlines, you know, closing out here, where I could have catastrophized but didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're flying back from Florida, most recent trip, my recent trip to Florida, flying back into Kalamazoo, and And then I'm chit-chatting with people around me and stuff, and everything's, you know, fun, cool, everything's great. And they, you know, you hear that ding, ding. Okay, so we know we're getting ready for our descent. You know, and the pilot comes on and says, yeah, we're going to, and I'm seeing clouds and clouds and clouds. And I'm like, oh, great, we're going to have to do an instrument landing. And then it gets a little turbulent, you know. Now, I love to fly. And I understand the theory of flight. I was studying to be a pilot at one point. I love flying. People get nervous flying. I could see people were getting nervous, planes jumping and bumping. And it's like it's a little turbulence. We're going through some clouds. It's Michigan. Of course, there's going to be pockets of warm and cold air everywhere. You know, it's going to be a little rough. But then I'm looking out the window because I love to watch the planes take off and land. Which, by the way, if you're going to catastrophize, those are the two most dangerous times of your flight. Now, while you're in the air, it's take off and landing. So anyway, I'm looking out the window, and all of a sudden the clouds break and I'm starting to see ground. And I'm like, okay, cool. And, you know, if you know where the Kalamazoo Airport is in our area, it's a, you know, small airport, but you kind of recognize the buildings nearby. And one of them is the Pfizer Pharmaceutical Company. You know? So I see Pfizer out the window and we're kind of high off the ground. And I'm like, Pfizer's right next to a runway, like right next to a runway. So we're coming down, we're dropping, you know, it's like coming in for a landing. And I just looked over the older woman and gentleman sitting next to me and all that, and they're getting nervous and everything. I said, just hang on, we're coming in hot. and they looked, and I said, don't worry, we'll be fine. And I knew we were going to make a hard landing. We're coming in a little faster than we should have been coming in. But I could have catastrophized that. I could have been, you know, gripping the upholstery off of the seat.
We're all going to die.
Yeah. But I knew we were coming in hot. I knew it was going to be a hard landing. They were like, you're right. We were coming in a little hot. I said, no big deal. Somebody's, like, phone flew over our shoulder. You know, they hit the brakes hard. You know, that's what happens when you come in a little fast, but, and it's probably because that pilot was at the end of the day and getting ready to go home and it's rush hour
he's
like, I've had enough. Just land this thing and get it over with. But anyway,
so for those of us, well, I guess, you know, with all the streaming services, nothing, you know, people of any generation probably know this movie, but Airplane, I'm picturing that scene where everybody's freaking out anyhow.
Yeah. So just to wrap up, some ways to cope with this catastrophization thing that happens to a lot of us, many. First of all, be aware that you might have an anxiety issue, and an anxiety issue will cause, you know, catastrophizing to be even worse than worse. And that there are treatments for that. We did a whole episode on anxiety. But just stop yourself in the moment. And am I okay right here, right now? And just take pause. Take a deep breath. Do some breathing. Focus on your breathing. And then think about what is instead of what if.
Yeah.
You know, what have you got right now? I'm alive right now. Everything's okay right now. The bills are paid right now. Staying in the moment. And then let thoughts just be thoughts. Maybe do some journaling if you need to write it out or whatever. And find the good that could come out instead of the worry about what the catastrophe is that probably will never happen. It might happen, but it might not happen. So we hope that this helps a little bit, bring some things to light, add a little humor to it, some storytelling. thanks, Jillian, for sharing your healthcare experience. Also, I'm sure that's going to help a lot of people. You know, we want people to be able to get help and be well.
Well, thank you, Dom.
Closing thoughts?
Just glad to be here. I'm super grateful that we talked about this because I feel like we are far from alone. And as always, I just want listeners to have some resources and some tools. And it's our goal to provide those. So thank you all for listening today.
Please share our podcast. We're on most every popular podcast platform. You know, we post on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, you know, we've got all the major podcasting platforms like Google and Apple and Spotify and et cetera, et cetera. It goes on. So please subscribe to our podcast And podcasts are better with friends, so you could talk about the episode afterwards yourselves.
And share.
Share, please share.
Sharing is caring.
Sharing is caring. So thanks for listening. Tune in next time on the Recovery Rebirth Podcast. Thanks, Jillian.
Thank you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.